Auditorium first. I know you were excited that it was done already. I'd forgotten the microphone, so. Well, once again, I'm going to tell you how encouraged I have been this week. I have really been built up. And I haven't gotten to probably a third of you. And I'm frustrated about that, you know, but I get involved in a conversation with one person and then, you know, I miss a lot of you and so I'm sorry about that. If I've not gotten to shake your hand or talk to you, be sure to, you know, if there's something you want to say, or comment you want to make or question that you have, don't hesitate, to talk with me this evening. But I very much appreciate this congregation and am thankful for the relationship that we have. Steve made some reference to it in his introduction on Sunday, your support of me. And as a result of that, I want to share a little bit with you before I get into the lesson about my work. But even before that, I want to thank the elders of this congregation for their willingness to invite me and to be part of your group for this these few short days, and your support of me and my work, and especially enjoyed the time that I got to spend with Lee and JD, and that was enjoyable. I don't know Lee that didn't know Lee that well. We've crossed paths every now and then, but. That was definitely a treat, and got to hear him speak yesterday. So that was a treat as well. So you're the red dot at the bottom of the map, and I'm the red dot farther up, okay, north and west of here. So if you were going to travel there, you'd go up I-65 to Indianapolis and all the way up past Lafayette, and then shoot across on US 24, and then up to Illinois 116, and you go right into Pontiac, Illinois. It takes about three and a half hours, probably right from this building. So you are welcome to come to my house anytime you want. The problem was, if you can remember the map, I'm not going to go back to it, it's not on the way anywhere for you. If you're going to Chicago, you're going to shoot right up I-65 all the way up there, and that's going to be your fastest route. If you're going west, you're going to stay on 74 and shoot all the way through Peoria and then on to Iowa. We're just not on your way anywhere. But if you happen to find yourself on I-55 between Chicago and St. Louis, stop in and see us. There's my address. There's my email address. There is my phone number. I'll leave it there for 10 seconds while you write it down if you're interested in that. Otherwise, you can look at my report that's on the bulletin board, and that information is right there. That's my family. I feel naked almost without my wife present with me. We're empty nesters now, but that is not our nest, actually, but that is what would be in our nest if it were at our house. God has blessed us richly. Five children, and some of you are asking about the daughter that I have that's single. She's right smack dab in the middle of that picture, in the back row there, holding one of her nephews. And so there you go. If you got somebody for her, let me know. She's 32 years old, and she is going. If she sees this, she is going to wring my neck. So please do not forward that on to her. So that was a fairly recent picture. I think that's got all the grandkids in it. So, but this is part of my work. Some of you are familiar with a paper that my grandfather started in 1969. It's just a simple little bulletin-sized paper. My grandfather wanted to put out something free that brethren could have. And this was back in the days when, you know, everything was print, nothing digital. And so we've got a website now, but it's still in print. So if you're old-fashioned and you would like a hard copy mailed to you, just email me and we'll put you on the mailing list. It's free. Thanks to voluntary partners who just, out of the goodness of their hearts, every now and then send us a check or some money or whatever, and we just keep publishing. It's only four times a year, and it fits nicely in the bottom of a birdcage when you're done with it. So if you want to do that. So you just thinkonthesethings.com and you can find it there. I do go to Sierra Leone. You'll recognize the canes there, up there in that picture. And so there's last November I was there and enjoy. I've been going there since 2011. Rich Gant was very instrumental in getting me interested in going there. And as a result of his having gone there, and lo and behold, now I'm going there most of the time in November every year. This year is really up in the air because of some health problems I'm having with my knee. So I don't know if that's going to actually be a reality or not, but thoroughly have enjoyed my work with Dan and Sean and their wives and the Cain family. It's just been very edifying and strengthening to me. And so it was a delight to see them, and I thank you for your support of Dan in his work. He is a hard, good worker. You have placed your money in a good place there. I'm also, you've heard me mention InLight Media. This is a relatively new organization that wasn't started by me, but they asked me to join them to help with that. And so there's, for example, I mentioned the studio that we do some interviews. This is just in the basement of one of the founders' houses. It's a small house. It's not as elaborate as that looks, but that's where we're doing an interview. I'm doing an interview there with Eric Borlaug. And there's just some thumbnails, if you will. If you go to inlightmedia.org or you go to YouTube, either one, and just type in InLight Media, you'll see those kinds of things pop up. And there's going to be more and more added. One of those thumbnails once a week probably for the rest of the year. And so I encourage you to subscribe. You know, you always hear that, and it's irritating. But anyway, that's if you're interested in that kind of thing, I think that would be a good source for you. Also, this Friday night and Saturday, I'm going to be hosting an event for men. This is, I think, our 21st one of those. And you can see the slate there. And David Green told me to tell you that he's got 3 seats left in his car if anybody wants to come with him, because David's been coming for several years. And so if you're interested in that, there's the website there at the bottom of that. All of this is, you know, it's kind of like advertising, and I feel a little bit bad about that. But this is kind of my work. These are the kinds of things that I'm doing, that I'm involving myself in, because quite frankly, I'm with a very small congregation that's only getting smaller, and I don't feel good about taking a wage and not staying busy. And so I'm trying to reach out and do kingdom work in other ways and support people in their efforts. And so it's been a pleasure to be a part of that. And if you have any interest in going to this event, there, I'll give you the map again. There's the route you take with that. It's about an hour south of where I live. So all of that, just to give you a little bit of insight. I wouldn't do this normally in a gospel meeting, but you are helping in my support, and I thought that at least I should give you a little glimpse of some of the things that I've got my hands involved in. And again, I thank you for your support. So this lesson is going to be somewhat of a summary, a review of what we've gone over, but with some different applications. And I appreciate Chuck's prayer. He sees where I'm going, and that means he's been following my train of thought. And in his prayer, he made some appropriate comments to the direction that I'm going. This is a COVID sermon. And what I mean by that, it was born from a very short lesson. Don't get your hopes up. It was born from a very short lesson, which I entitled Different. And I thought it appropriate simply because what we were doing during COVID in assembling as a church, and remember, we're fairly small, so this is relatively easy to do. We were assembling outdoors, away from our building, and away from the eyes of anyone in town who might disapprove. And we were gathering together, and that kind of, when you do things in a different way, when it comes down to the things you do, all of a sudden you realize, well, how are we going to do the Lord's Supper? And all congregations wrestled with that. And that was non-traditional. It was different. And so I observed then that very often we don't like different. And like the word new, there's some suspicion that comes with it. There's a discomfort. And likewise, we talked about the fact that different is not inherently good or bad. There are good reasons to be different, and there are bad reasons to be different. In fact, sometimes someone will say that different just for the sake of being different is not good. I would qualify that a little bit. I think I know what people mean by that, but I don't think that expression is quite accurate. Sometimes different is good to be, if for no other reason than to show that different is okay. Because sometimes we raise up a generation of people who we only did it one way, and then they go to another congregation or someone suggests doing it in a little different way, and everybody goes berserk. And because they didn't realize that there were multiple ways something could be done. So sometimes it's good to change just for the sake of change, so that the younger generation knows that this is a liberty that we have. But there are many carnal reasons that people have for being different as well. So I wasn't very good at grammar in school, but I've kind of become a little bit of a grammar geek since maturing a little bit. And so different is an adjective, and thus it is a word that is used to describe something. No, I am not going to sing a song for you from Schoolhouse Rock tonight. But it simply means the definition of different is not the same as another or each other, unlike in nature, form, or quality, distinct, separate. Okay? And while there are contexts in which none of us would want to be different, there are contexts also in which we would definitely want to be different or separate or set apart from others. Now, some people, it just seems, revel in marching to the beat of a different drummer. And if most people are going one way, then the rebels want to go another way. Push the envelope. Challenge tradition. If the left is in power, then to be different, people will swing to the right. And we see that happening. And if the right is in power, then to be different, people will swing to the left. This has been demonstrated in our presidential elections and that sort of thing. In a world without standards, this pendulum swing is inevitable. But in this lesson, I want us to explore a different ways in which different is not only good, but it is inherent to being God's people. We are called to be different, separate, but in a different way than the world sometimes wants to be different. And if we're not, then we're really not living up to our calling that I made reference to. So this lesson is going to be a little bit of a summary of what we've talked about. Now, consider an Old Testament example of what I want us to consider in this lesson. You'll recall, you know the story, that when Israel had left their bondage in Egypt and approached the promised land the first time, that they sent in 12 spies. And we all know the disappointing report that 10 of those 12 spies gave in saying that the land could not be taken. That was their conclusion after spying out the land. It could not be taken. Now, this was a view that was different than the leadership, than Moses and Joshua. Indeed, it was contrary to God's will. God was displeased with this faithless report, and ultimately would not allow that generation to enter the land. Yet you also know that there were exceptions to that punishment of not being able to enter the promised land. Note what is said about one of those in Numbers chapter 14. Numbers chapter 14 and verse 24. It says, "But my servant Caleb, because he has a different spirit in him and has followed me fully, I will bring into the land where he went, and his descendants shall inherit it." We're told Caleb had a different spirit than most in his generation and was therefore treated differently by God. And when the majority of people are behaving unfaithfully, it is not only good to be different, it is essential if we want to obtain an outcome that is different from the judgment that is going to come upon the unfaithful. But let's talk about being different for a purpose. Go with me to Matthew chapter 5. You've noticed we've been in the Sermon on the Mount most every lesson, at some point in the Sermon on the Mount. Matthew chapter 5 and verse 14. This will be very familiar to you. Jesus says, "You are the light of the world. A city that is set on a hill cannot be hidden. Nor do they light a lamp and put it under a basket, but on a lampstand, and it gives light to all who are in the house. Let your light so shine before men that they may see your good works and glorify your Father in heaven." The imagery that Jesus uses here of light and darkness is a powerful one, because the difference is so stark between light and darkness. Light would be of really no value to finding one's way through the darkness if it was not different from the darkness. And that's a pretty obvious statement. But you see the difference? In calling his disciples to be lights in this world of darkness in general, Jesus is calling us to be significantly and valuably different. He says, "They will see your good works." Lights shine to reveal what is good versus what is bad. And that is a vital difference. And what is the result of that, according to Jesus here in this place? They will glorify your Father in heaven. See, being different, the different that we're talking about, being different like Jesus calls us to be, is not about getting attention for ourselves. And sometimes that's what people do. They just want to be, you know, maybe it's just in something as simple as clothing or adornment of some sort. You know, the world generally dresses the same this way. I'm going to be different. Okay? And many times it's about getting attention of some kind. The world does that a lot. That's not the different we're talking about. We're going to talk about a different. Being different, the different is about getting people to glorify God for what is good, because he is the light source. He is the definer of what is good. He is the creator and he is the sustainer of all that is good. Now, let's go to Philippians as well. And we've gone to Philippians a number of times in this series. In Philippians chapter 2, and beginning with verse 14, he says, "Do all things without murmuring and disputing, that you may become blameless and harmless, children of God without fault, in the midst of a crooked and perverse generation, among whom you shine as lights in the world, holding fast the word of life, so that I may rejoice in the day of Christ, that I have not run in vain or labored in vain." I couldn't resist this verse back in the COVID days because he uses the word complain. And boy, did we hear a lot of complaining. And I have to admit, I was doing it too. I was complaining about all the complaining. We're good at complaining. Lots of people murmur and complain about lots of different things. That's one of the characteristics we remember about the children of Israel in coming out of Egypt. Do you grow weary of reading that story? I feel for God every time I read that story, and I realize I do the same thing to Him. So since 2020, there's been a lot about COVID, quarantines, masks, vaccines, restrictions on freedom, China, Russia, Ukraine, Israel, Gaza, politics, injustice, racial unrest, immigration, voting, tariffs, protests, riots, shootings. And we could go on and on and on. Differing is something that we all easily fall into. But saints, we are called to be different in our differing. We will differ. We will need to differ. But the way we differ has to be different than the way the world differs. We're supposed to be lights in the world, a significantly different kind of different. Not different in worldly, carnal ways, but in blameless, innocent ways, as children of God. Shining as lights in the world, as described by Paul here, is not accomplished by wearing masks or not wearing masks. It's not accomplished by getting the vaccine or refusing the vaccine, or by voting for Biden or by voting for Trump. That's the way the world expresses its differences. And I'm not saying you can't have opinions about those things. But the way that we differ has to be different. Different is done by holding fast, as he says here, to the word of life. Not holding fast to the so-called worldly experts that we just saw in some YouTube clip. Go with me to 1 Peter, another text that we have been to. And 1 Peter chapter 2, I believe Chuck made reference to some phraseology from this section right here as well in his prayer. 1 Peter 2 and verse 9. You are a chosen generation, a royal priesthood, a holy nation, His own special people, that you may proclaim the praises of Him who called you out of darkness into His marvelous light. Who once were not a people, but are now the people of God. Who had not obtained mercy, but now have obtained mercy. All of these descriptions emphasize different. We read this text in a previous lesson. But I want to bring out the different aspect here. They emphasize different. Chosen generation. Royal priesthood. Holy nation. God's own special people. All of that. All of those phrases speak to a relationship with God that is distinct and separate from the rest of the world. It's different. And by the way, if you're familiar with the Old Testament, these terms that are used here in verse 9 are terms that were used for the nation of Israel when God called them out of Egypt, Exodus chapter 19. But they broke the covenant that God made with them and rejected Jesus Christ. And the nation of Israel is no longer these. It cannot be described by these things. I'm not saying that an Israelite or a Jew or whatever you want to call them today cannot be different. But if they're going to be, it's not going to be by reciting their genealogy back to Abraham, but by being followers of Jesus Christ. That's the only way. And this is a perspective that is so easy for us to lose in a world of strife and conflict. as political parties vie for power. We just feel this compulsion as Americans to choose sides and have strong opinions. However, Christ calls us to align ourselves with Him. I can hear some of my critics say right now, those aren't mutually exclusive. And they're not. So I want to be clear about that. You can vote. You can have an opinion about political things that are going on and still align yourself with Jesus Christ. But the warning is that we tend to begin thinking, because these values we feel very strongly about, both whether they come from God or they come from our government or a political party, and we're going to wed these things. And that is going to make Christianity, if we can use that term as a category, defiled. Okay? Your values as a Christian, you may align, and you might say, well, that political party more aligns with much of what I see. And that's a fine observation to make. But don't then make the next leap to thinking that if you're a Christian, you need to vote for this person because they will help get this country back on track. Because that may or may not be the case. That depends on God's will, because He uses the nations as He wills. We have to hold fast to Jesus Christ. We identify ourselves as Christians, not Republicans. Again, I'm not saying they're mutually exclusive, but priority. I am a Christian. And that's what I want to be known as. And I want to reach Republicans, Democrats, Libertarians, Green Party, atheists, agnostics. And I sometimes wonder if my being vocal and opinionated about things that are purely political interfere with my witness as a Christian. Let's be identifying ourselves as Christians. Being chosen to be a part of a royal priesthood, a holy nation, and God's only special people is not mere status. It's not just a station in life. It is not the goal. It is for a purpose and a function. We are a different for a purpose. And Peter tells us that you may proclaim the praises of Him who called you out of darkness. We want to proclaim the praises of Him. And so often we are tempted to sing the praises of men. And that can happen religiously with preachers. And that can, it definitely happens politically with candidates and presidents and that sort of thing. We once were not God's people, is what Peter says. But now it's different. We have now obtained mercy, and that obligates us to be different, to be holy, to be lights. It's not just a title that we wear. It's not merely an identification. It is to do something, to be something. And so, we are going to be different in our faith and in our conduct. Staying right there in 1 Peter chapter 2, keep reading in verse 11. Beloved, I beg you as sojourners and pilgrims, abstain from fleshly lusts which war against the soul, having your conduct honorable among the Gentiles, that when they speak against you as evildoers, they may by your good works which they observe glorify God in the day of visitation. We looked at this text last night. It is on the basis that we've just been looking at there in verses 9 and 10 that he makes this appeal. The text emphasizes that this world is not our home. I was making that emphasis last night. We are sojourners. We are pilgrims. Some translations say strangers, aliens, exiles, as I noted last night, in a foreign land. We are in a foreign land. You might say, no, I was born here. You were born of the flesh here. But you've been born again, right? And that this perspective is the theme of this letter, as I pointed out last night, seems obvious when we consider how it begins. I noted that last night in chapter 1. In verse 1, it is addressed to the pilgrims or exiles dispersed throughout the Roman Empire, that it is not their home. But I didn't point out last night, chapter 5 and verse 13. You notice how he ends this letter? I compared it last night, I believe, to the Babylonian exile. And it's interesting that in verse 13, he says, "She who is in Babylon, elect together with you, greets you, and so does Mark, my son." And there's a lot of debate about this verse and what it means. Was Peter literally in the city of Babylon? Archaeologically, if my understanding is correct, that would probably be very unlikely that there was such a place for him to do that, or why in the world he would even be there. So I would suggest to you that he's bookended his letter to try and get Christians to think about the book of Daniel, to think about the fact of the time when they were exiles in Babylon. And so he just uses the word Babylon at the end to emphasize that fact. And that's what I want to emphasize in application to ourselves. She who is in Babylon. Most believe that she is a reference to the church, God's people, being in exile in this world. And therefore, what does Babylon stand for? Well, it could stand for the world. In their day, it would stand for the Roman Empire, or maybe Jerusalem, depending on when you think the letter was written. And again, as I pointed out, this is very reminiscent of Daniel, Hananiah, Mishael, and Azariah, or better known, I guess, as Shadrach, Meshach, and Abednego. It was the design of King Nebuchadnezzar, you'll recall from Daniel chapter 1, to take the best of the Judean captives and enculturate them in the ways of Babylon. Let's get the smartest and the brightest and the most handsome among the Israelites, and let's train them in the Babylonian ways. And that makes sense. It makes real good worldly sense to do that. If you've got an empire, you want to train the best and the brightest in your ways. But you'll remember Daniel's response to that in chapter 1. We're told that Daniel purposed in his heart that he would not defile himself with the king's delicacies. Yes, these men were going to be treated royally. They were going to be able to eat foods that nobody else amongst the captives were going to be eating. They were going to be given great advantages. And it wasn't that Daniel was entirely opposed to the whole process, but some of it involved things that were going to violate his conscience, that were going to defile him as far as the law of Moses was concerned. And he was a follower of God first, not Nebuchadnezzar. And they refused. And I think this is representative of the fact that these men were not going to forsake their devotion to God or their identity with God in order to enjoy the benefits of the worldly culture in which they were exiles. And brethren, we've got to make that application. Daniel does this under captive circumstances, adverse circumstances. We have freedoms that Daniel never had. Yet we find ourselves blending into the culture in ways that are defiling. Again, Paul became all things to all men that he might win the more. There's nothing wrong with blending in with the culture, using the liberty that we have in Christ to blend in with the culture for spiritual reasons, but not for carnal reasons. And that's why we are to abstain from fleshly lusts and make sure that our conduct is honorable among the Gentiles, using Gentiles as those who are not God's chosen people, that aren't different. They're like everybody else, but we're different. So as followers of Christ, we are aliens living in a foreign land. And indeed, the physical culture, nation, race, family, is not supposed to ultimately define us. Rather, we are different. We are defined by Christ. We are exiles who identify with a different culture and are loyal to a different kingdom. The kingdom and culture of Christ. And this will sometimes put us at odds with the culture in which we are strangers or foreigners. We will be different in a different way, in a Christ-like way. Now go with me over to 1 John, just a few pages over. In 1 John chapter 2 and verse 15, you'll recognize this. Do not love the world or the things in the world. If anyone loves the world, the love of the Father is not in him. For all that is in the world, the lust of the flesh, the lust of the eyes, and the pride of life is not of the Father, but is of the world. And the world is passing away and the lust of it. But he who does the will of God abides forever. We know this text. We've heard it many times. But do we apply it to ourselves? Do we apply it to our present sojourn like we should? You know, you could insert the word Babylon in place of world in this text and understand the approach of Daniel and his righteous friends. Just do that. Do not love Babylon or the things in Babylon. If anyone loves Babylon, the love of the Father is not in him. For all that is in Babylon, the lust of the flesh, the lust of the eyes, and the pride of life, is not of the Father, but is of the world. That works. That is no problem whatsoever. Of course, reading it that way wouldn't mean that Daniel and those like him were not good servants, good neighbors, good workers in Babylon. They were, as we read Daniel. Well, they were loyal insofar as they could. But they were different. And they acted like they were different. Because Babylon was defiled. And it was defiling. And so they were careful. Of course, that's a pretty easy application to make. But to make it applicable to ourselves, we just need to insert the name of our current place of exile. Do we see that it makes just as much sense if we insert America in that verse? Do not love America or the things in America. If anyone loves America, the love of the Father is not in him. For all that is in America, the lust of the flesh, the lust of the eyes, and the pride of life is not of the Father, but is of America. And America is passing away. And the lust of it, but he who does the will of God abides forever. Well, we're comfortable making the application to Babylon, or maybe we're comfortable making the application to Nazi Germany. But when we make application to the land of our own nativity, all of a sudden, that's maybe not appropriate, some might think. It is entirely appropriate. And if we don't like that specific application, then it may indicate, it might be just a little litmus test that indicates that we love America more than we should. And that we have taken American exceptionalism too far. That we have been enculturated by those American values rather than seeing ourselves as different. James chapter 4. James chapter 4, beginning with verse 1. Where do wars and fights come from among you? Do they not come from your desires for pleasure that war in your members? You lust and do not have. You murder and covet and cannot obtain. You fight and war, yet you do not have because you do not ask. You ask and do not receive because you ask amiss that you may spend it on your pleasures. Adulterers and adulteresses, do you not know that friendship with the world is enmity with God? Whoever therefore wants to be a friend of the world makes himself an enemy of God. We've seen a lot of conflict and fighting among Americans throughout its history, quite frankly. It ebbs and flows. And COVID kind of brought to the surface more of that in a kind of concentrated way. The world fights and wrangles over their differences. But we are called to a different. Selfish ambition, as James refers to it here, and fighting and wars come from worldly thinking. If you back up into chapter 3 and verse 16, he describes it there, "For where envy and self-seeking exist, confusion and every evil thing will be there." All of this wars against our souls, is what James says. And it inevitably leads to conflict, including conflict with those who take a stand with Jesus as King. And we see that illustrated for us amply in the New Testament. The people who stood with Jesus Christ paid for it with their flesh and with their lives. And James bluntly says that friendship with the world is enmity with God. Certainly, Christians are at odds with so much of what the world embraces. Therefore, our loyalty is not to a geopolitical country, but to Christ and His kingdom. And again, we could just insert the land of our nativity into this text here in James and make appropriate application to ourselves. Brethren, make this clarification in your minds. We are not Americans who happen to be Christians. We are Christians who happen to sojourn in America. And if we don't make that distinction, then we won't make a difference. We won't make a different difference. A godly, holy difference. And maybe that's why the churches are shrinking in many places in our country. We're not making a difference. If we're going to make a difference in this world, then we cannot just be different. We're going to have to be a different. We have to make sure that our conduct is honorable, so that even though the world may speak against us as evil, even though they may shoot at us, they may, by our good works, which they observe, glorify God. And this is very much what happened to the Babylonian exiles who remained faithful to God. You know the stories of Daniel. Shadrach, Meshach, and Abednego were threatened with death if they didn't bow down to that image of Nebuchadnezzar's. But they would not bow to the king's image. They didn't know whether or not God was going to save them. But they did know one thing. They were not going to bow. They were not going to obey the king. And their faith was literally tested by fire. And the impact of that had King Nebuchadnezzar glorifying God. You read the story. Read it all the way to the end of the chapter. Nebuchadnezzar ends up glorifying God because of their good works. They're different. And of course, the greatest example of being different for God is found in Jesus' behavior. During his arrest and his trial and his crucifixion, from his gracious healing of one who had come to arrest him, Peter had chopped his ear off, he had been injured by the carnal zeal of one of his own. I mean, the high priest's servant had been injured by the carnal zeal of Jesus' own disciple. And if you find yourself sympathizing with Peter, it's because we're carnal. We think just like Peter thought. But we're given that example of Peter. We're given that example of Peter as a model for what Jesus wants us to be. So from that incident to his "Father, forgive them" as he hung on the cross, Jesus manifested faith and endurance and grace in the face of gross injustice, to which the Gentile, charged with overseeing Jesus' execution, responded with, "Truly, this man was the Son of God." Just by observing Jesus' own behavior on the cross, combined with some of the events that were taking place, that were different. And it is to that that we are called. And so I go back to 1 Peter chapter 2 to read again what I read the other night in verse 20. 1 Peter 2 and verse 20. For what credit is it if when you are beaten for your faults you take it patiently? But when you do good and suffer for it, if you take it patiently, this is commendable before God. For to this you were called, because Christ also suffered for us, leaving us an example that you should follow His steps. I think I was corrected in some emphasis I placed on this verse the other night. So I want to make sure that I get it right tonight. What's our calling? Our calling isn't merely to suffer. It's our calling is to do good and suffer for it. Like Jesus did on the cross. It was a gross injustice. Why doesn't God fix all of the injustices? Why doesn't God pull Jesus down off the cross? Why doesn't Jesus obliterate everybody who nailed His Son to the cross? Because that was necessary in order to accomplish what God wanted to accomplish for our salvation. And that may be why I have to suffer injustice, so that other people are saved, like we studied in the Philippian jailer, who ends up being saved as a result of an injustice to Paul and Silas, who did not object to their being imprisoned at the time. He didn't use his Roman citizenship at the time. He used it later. But by suffering the injustice, what good might come from that? And sometimes when we're suffering the injustice, we can't see any good might come from that. But God can make good come from that. This is what we have been called to. Many people are claiming loyalty to Jesus, but they're not behaving like Jesus. Jesus and His gospel cannot be equated with cultural concerns like life, liberty, and the pursuit of happiness as defined by the world and its governments. And neither can they be defended in carnal ways through political machinations and imagine that we are serving the cause of Jesus Christ through nationalistic patriotism. As disciples, we need to remember what Jesus said to Simon Peter the Zealot when he pulled that sword out. Put your sword in its place, for all who take the sword will perish by the sword. We need to remember what Jesus said to the Roman governor presiding over his unfair trial. He said, "My kingdom is not of this world. If my kingdom were of this world, my servant would fight so that I should not be delivered to the Jews. But now my kingdom is not from here." We need to remember what Paul said. This will be the last text in 2 Corinthians chapter 10. Beginning with verse 3. 2 Corinthians chapter 10, beginning with verse 3. "For though we walk in the flesh, we do not war according to the flesh. For the weapons of our warfare are not carnal, but mighty in God for pulling down strongholds, casting down arguments, and every high thing that exalts itself against the knowledge of God, bringing every thought into captivity to the obedience of Christ, and being ready to punish all disobedience when your obedience is fulfilled." Our King is different. His kingdom is different. We are to be different. And our weapons in this fight, which is real, are different. Different in a good way. A different, a mighty different. And if our faith is truly not in men, but in God, then our words and our ways will be different than the words and ways of men and all of their talking points. We are going to have scriptural talking points. So, brethren, let's rise above the worldly fray and conflict, and let's keep our eyes on Jesus and stand for what He stands for and what He has revealed in Scripture. And let the world have its squabbles while we are lights in all of the darkness. And if you have not come to Jesus Christ, you are in the darkness. and without hope in this world. And we invite you, come to Christ. See, here is water. What keeps you from being baptized into Christ and identifying yourself with Christ and being loyal to His kingdom? If we can help you in any way, let us know. All together we stand and sing.